Hello and welcome in to another episode of the Big Ten Blitz. As always, I'm your host, Sean, and Week 10 in the Big Ten did not disappoint. We had a lot of great matchups, a lot of great games and finishes across the conference this past weekend. So I wanted to sit down and break down the implications of some of the results that we saw on Saturday and give you my biggest takeaways from what was a jam-packed weekend of Big Ten football and what it means for the rest of the college football season. No sense in wasting any time. We can dive right in today, and we'll start with what was the game of the weekend across college football. Ohio State traveling to Happy Valley to take on Penn State. And it looked like the tides were finally turning early in that game. Penn State jumped out to a 10-0 lead, thanks in part to a pick six on one of Will Howard's first pass attempts of the game. After that moment, Ohio State really settled in on both sides of the football, dominated both sides of the line of scrimmage, and were honestly just a couple plays away from this being a 2-3 or even 4-score game. Really seemed like Ohio State was in control of that game after the first quarter. But credit to Penn State, they made the plays they needed to keep it tight going into the fourth quarter, and they were right there. They had an opportunity to take the lead in the fourth quarter, but Ohio State came up with another clutch goal line stand, ran the ball out the final 5 minutes of the game, and held on for a 20-13 win, one that puts them back in the driver's seat to get back to the Big Ten championship and restores the faith of a lot of Ohio State fans who, after a loss to Oregon and then that disappointing performance against Nebraska last weekend, a lot of Ohio State fans were starting to panic, were starting to call for Ryan Day's job, and this performance, I think, silenced those critics, at least for a little bit. So we'll break down what this means for both teams, and we'll start on the Penn State side, and we'll start on the offensive side of the football, where I was just aghast at the play calling that Penn State rolled out for this game. I was really excited about Andy Kotelnicki coming into the season. He has undoubtedly made this offense a lot more well-balanced and a lot more potent, but I think he got too cute for his own good today. They came out with way too many gimmicky plays. On the first drive of the football game, they had four different guys take the snap. They had Drew Aller, Bo Prabula, Nick Singleton, and Tyler Warren all take snaps on the first drive, and that kind of continued throughout the entire game, where they had different guys taking snaps, where they had offensive linemen go break out to one side of the field and come back and try to get this Ohio State defense out of sorts. And I'm okay with a handful of those games coming from Penn State to try to keep the Ohio State defense honest, but generally when you're using those kind of gimmicky plays, those only work when you are winning at the line of scrimmage, but you need to free up some guys in the second level, help guys get a space on the edge or on the perimeter in order to generate some big plays that way. Or if you're playing an undisciplined defense, great way to try to get some guys out of position to generate big plays. But neither was the case when they were going up against this Ohio State defense. Ohio State was winning at the point of attack all day long. Penn State could not get a consistent push at the line of scrimmage in the run game, and they could not protect Drew Aller very well. It started off all right, but Ohio State really wore down that offensive line as the game went on. Yeah, I'm all for giving defenses different looks, but it seemed to me that the Penn State coaching staff thought that the only way they could really move the ball against this Ohio State defense was by using these gimmicks, and it wasn't working all day long, which is to be expected when you can't win at the point of attack like they were. Penn State ended up running, I want to say, around 15 kind of gimmick plays, but only one was really successful. And there was that Tyler Warren run in the fourth quarter to set up the gold go situation late in the fourth quarter. But even that wasn't really because they schemed up a great run for him off that direct snap. He was able to gain 30 yards in that run because Cody Simon and Denzel Burke both took really bad angles. It should have only been a 5 to 6 yard run if Ohio State had stuck to their assignments. It was the one play really all game that they weren't able to do that, and it resulted in Penn State's biggest play of the game. And it set them up with first and goal at the three, and that brings me to my next point, was the play calling in that goal to go situation was head-scratching, mind-boggling. They had first and goal at the three-yard line, and they ran it three straight times to set up then fourth and goal from about the one-yard line, maybe just outside the one-yard line. And I was on board with those first two runs right up the middle, try to bully them, try to not overcomplicate this, let's just get into the end zone. But on both of those run plays, they weren't really able to get a push. It wasn't like, oh, they were just inches from getting a touchdown. We only need one more play. We're right there. After two runs, they had first and goal at the three. Now you have third and goal, and you're still outside of the one-yard line. It was evident they weren't getting a push, so I think you know you're going to go for it on fourth down in that situation, and you have two plays to do it. And the fact that they did not utilize Drew Aller's legs in either of those situations or get the ball to Tyler Warren, I think is pretty inexcusable. Because the only thing that was working for Penn State all day were quarterback runs and getting the ball to Tyler Warren. The fact that Penn State, after two runs, still had third and goal from outside the one-yard line, decided to run it right up the middle again, and then, when that didn't work, run a play action trying to get it to Tyler Warren. That was maybe the most predictable play call of the entire day. Ohio State and every fan at home watching knew that Penn State was not going to run the ball a fourth straight time. They knew that they were going to try to get the ball to Tyler Warren. And so I think a play-action pass to try to get the ball to Tyler Warren in that flat was as predictable as it could have been. Ohio State saw it, they jumped on it, no one else was open, and they got the fourth down stop. The fact that you have four plays inside the three-yard line to try to get a touchdown, they did not get Drew Aller running a single time, they did not get Tyler Warren the ball a single time, is inexcusable. I would have loved to see maybe a triple option play where you get Drew Aller, Bo Prabula could have brought him in for a play too. Get him trying to go into the outside, give him an option to run the ball, pitch it to Singleton or Allen, or shovel it to Tyler Warren. That would have been a great play call to run one of those four plays, and they weren't able to do it. Of all the plays they had throughout the game where they were trying to give Ohio State different looks and they were running, like I said, those gimmicky plays, to not even try to do that then in these one of the four most important plays of the entire game for the Penn State offense, I think is also just strange. It just really seemed to me like Andy Kotelnicki and this Penn State offense did not trust their playmakers and got too cute and too in their head when it mattered the most. And credit to Ohio State's defense and Jim Knowles. After getting picked apart by Dylan Gabriel against Oregon, they've put back-to-back nearly flawless performances. And even though Ohio State's game plan and execution was, dare I say, almost flawless, Tyler Warren was still the best player on the field most of the time when Penn State had the ball. Yet he only had four targets, seven touches in total. I thought that the Penn State offense needed to be force-feeding him the ball, because if you can get Ohio State to try to commit two guys to covering Tyler Warren, that's how you open up some other spots on the field. That's how you get some other receivers open, and that's how you get some room for Nick Singleton or Katron Allen. But that wasn't the case. It was clear that Ohio State was game planning for Tyler Warren, but Penn State didn't make it too hard for that Ohio State defense. So really, it was just a disappointing performance from Penn State's offense. What's really frustrating for Penn State fans must be that the defense wasn't great. That goes without saying, but they did enough for them to win the game. They had three sacks, two turnovers, and a touchdown. Penn State's only touchdown of the game came from that defensive side of the football. And I think if you hold to this Ohio State offense to 20 points, I think that gives you everything you need to be able to go out and win that game. But once again, a big game for James Franklin came down to issues on the offensive side of the ball, struggling with what their identity is, questionable play calling in the biggest moments, and getting outplayed at the quarterback position. I certainly don't blame Drew Aller for how this offense went. I don't think he's been put in a position to succeed when you look at the lack of talent he has at wide receiver. I think one of the worst wide receiver groups in the entire Big Ten resides in Happy Valley. And I've already talked about the play calling. He was really never in rhythm, never really given many easy throws just to get into that rhythm. Even though I'm not blaming Drew Aller for this loss or really just the stagnant state of Penn State's offense in big games, it does go without saying that Drew Aller is not the quarterback that a lot of Penn State fans thought he was. He's just not accurate enough to throw these wide receivers open or fit the ball into really small windows and do what he needs to do to elevate an otherwise lacking wide receiver room. Because really, this offense is Tyler Warren, Nick Singleton, and Katron Allen. All three are tremendous playmakers, but when your best three pass catchers are a tight end and a couple running backs, that does put your offense in a bind, and Drew Aller just isn't the type of quarterback to overcome the deficits they have at wide receiver. And now, if I'm a Penn State fan, quite frankly, this is my final straw with James Franklin. I think that James Franklin needs to win a college football playoff game in order for me to want him back if I'm a Penn State fan. And listen, this game was really hyped up because of how much it meant to both head coaches and how badly both teams needed a big-time win. And I've been a defender of both Ryan Day and James Franklin for a while, but for different reasons. I defend Ryan Day because I really don't think that Ohio State can go out and get someone who can keep them at the level that Ryan Day has kept them at. Yes, he has struggled in big games. Yes, he has struggled against Michigan. And yes, he hasn't won a national championship. Even so, Ohio State is a consensus top five program in all of college football during the Ryan Day era. He has made the college football playoff all but two seasons, and he's been at the doorstep of winning multiple national championships. You look at what Kalen DeBoer is doing at Alabama. I love him as a coach, and I believe that he can maintain success at Alabama, but even him, he already has two losses and is one loss away from missing the college football playoff. He's already lost to an unranked team at Alabama, something that Ryan Day has never done at Ohio State. if there is a program in college football that has a higher expectation of winning and has better resources to win than Ohio State, it's Alabama. They say goodbye to Nick Saban, and even they are having trouble sticking to the standard that they have set for so long. And if Alabama isn't able to do it, I don't know who Ohio State could go out and find that would keep them a consensus top five team moving forward. So that's why I've always been a defender of Ryan Day. I don't think Ohio State can go get a coach that's better than him. For James Franklin, I've defended him, not because there isn't a coach in college football that can go win 9 or 10 games every year at Penn State, but because I thought he could be the one to get Penn State over this hump. I thought that he, especially this season with the schedule he was given and the amount of experience he has on both sides of the football, I thought that this year was the year that James Franklin could break through that glass ceiling, be a legitimate Big Ten title contender, get to the playoff and win some games. But if James Franklin can't beat Ohio State, if he can't make the Big Ten championship game, and if he can't win at least one college football playoff game this season with this talent, with this coaching staff, and with this schedule, when is he going to do it? That's my perspective. And that's not to say that season is dead. They can still go 11-0. They can still host the college football playoff game against a team like Notre Dame or Boise State or LSU, teams that are definitely beatable, and get to that final eight. And if they are able to win a playoff game and prove that they are a top 10 program in college football, I'm all on board with keeping James Franklin. But even if he wins out and he gets to the playoff and he loses to a team like that, a team that is, I think, seen as being on Penn State's level, if he can't break through this year, if he can't get a signature win, one that he really has not had since that upset win against Ohio State in 2016, then I think it's about time to move on, because there are a lot of coaches in college football who can win 9 or 10 games at Penn State, who can keep them a top 10 program and perennial college football playoff contender. Because that's what Penn State looks to be right now, a college football playoff contender. Someone who's in the conversation to make the playoff every year, but there is certainly no guarantee to make the 12-team playoff every year, and they are no guarantee to win games and be in a position to fight for a championship. They just aren't. And I think their game against Ohio State once again highlighted that point. And so if James Franklin can't do it this year, I think it might be time for a change of scenery in Happy Valley, because there are plenty of coaches out there who can win 9 or 10 games every year at Penn State, given their talent level, given their blue blood status, given what they can do in recruiting, given their NIL packages. Like, Penn State is a top 10 program in college football, and we should see results on the field that indicate as much. And if, you know, James Franklin can't do it this year, just off the top of my head, guys like Manny Diaz at Duke, I know he just left Penn State for a head coaching gig, but I'm sure he would return to Happy Valley to go be their head coach. I think he's capable of keeping Penn State at a 9 or 10 win team. Kurt Cignetti, I doubt he wants to jump from Indiana after just one season there. I get the feeling that he really loves being there, and the fans have certainly embraced him. But hey, if a top 10 coaching job in the country comes knocking, offering you $10 million a year, it's going to be hard for him to say no. And I absolutely believe that Kurt Cignetti could keep this Penn State program where they are with even more upside than James Franklin. Matt Campbell at Iowa State, if he's ever going to get pried away from there, it might be for a job like Penn State. Dabo Swinney, even. I mean, with that second loss that they've had this season, I think it's safe to say that fans are starting to sour on him. He may get sick of the hate that he's been getting in Death Valley and want to look for a change of scenery. I would love him at Penn State. I think that'd be a great fit. Kyle Whittingham at Utah. I mean, they're having a down season. They may want to look for a change in scenery. Kyle Flood, Texas's offensive coordinator, he's certainly looking for a promotion. I think he could do a great job. Chip Kelly, too. I doubt he's not going to be Ohio State's offensive coordinator forever. And if a place like Penn State offers him a job, I'm sure he'll be interested in at least hearing that out. Those are just some coaches off the top of my head that I know can keep Penn State at the level they're at. And if James Franklin isn't able to break through this ceiling this year, I think it might be time for Penn State to consider some of these other options to come in, because sometimes that is what you need as a program to get to that next level, is a change of scenery. But really, my short summary of what I saw from Penn State on Saturday was same shit, different year. Penn State is not an elite program. They are nowhere near being a national championship contender. And it really seems like this program has stagnated under James Franklin. And at a certain point, fans are going to expect more. And I think that point is now. It was an inspiring fight from Penn State, but it was the same shortcomings as ever is what prevented Penn State from getting that signature win. And the pressure is on James Franklin now. That's all I can say about that. And pivoting over to Ohio State, where it's a completely different vibe. Everyone was ready to fire Ryan Day a few days ago, and now their national championship hopes are back on. think biggest takeaway was the offensive line, who played incredibly. They were able to run the ball against a great defense, unlike anything we've seen in the Ryan Day era since, honestly, 2019, because that's been this offense's biggest weakness, has been their inability to run the ball in the biggest games against their best opponents. And they were able to do that today. You know, that 50-yard drive where they ran the ball 11 straight plays, ran out the clock, and secured the victory, I think, was cathartic for Ryan Day, and this offense meant a lot to them. Offensive line, you know, was the biggest reason for that. They did allow 3 sacks, but considering they had 2 guys who were playing a new position for the first time in their career, and considering the talent on this Penn State defense, I think they did a great job of protecting Will Howard. The 2 turnovers from Will Howard were troubling, were definitely a little concerning for Ohio State, but he showed up when he needed it the most. And Will Howard, what can you say? He's a baller. When they need a play out of him, he has tended to deliver for Ohio State this season. If this offensive line is able to continue to play this way and push teams around, it opens up everything else, makes it a lot easier. And I like their chances of getting back to the Big Ten Championship and giving Oregon a run for their money. Defensive side of the football, they looked great again. They clearly made some adjustments in that bye week, came out strong against Nebraska last week, and they continued that into this weekend. And it really was helpful because Ohio State's defense knew that Penn State didn't have a wide receiver that could beat any of their cornerbacks in one-on-one coverage. Made everyone's job a lot easier. They stacked the box. They manned up Penn State's receivers like 90% of the time, which really let their defensive front do whatever they want. Let those linebackers blitz, drop into coverage, confuse Drew Aller, and make the entire defense's jobs a lot easier. I think it goes without saying that this Ohio State team is tougher and more resilient than last year. And having a mobile quarterback like Will Howard, yes, he isn't the most perfect passer, but having his legs is invaluable in the red zone. And then in that 4-minute drill you saw to close out the game. Like I said at the beginning, there were a few plays that if they went Ohio State's way, they could have had a much more resounding victory. This easily could have been a 2-, 3-, or 4-score game for the Buckeyes. But the plays don't always, you know, work out like you planned. And at the end of the day, you have to go out and win the game. You have to make the plays to win it. And Ohio State did. Penn State, Ohio State is in position now to make it back to the Big Ten Championship game for a rematch with Oregon. Their college football playoff hopes are as alive as ever. And it was a really encouraging performance from Ohio State for the fans that were hitting the panic button just a few short days ago. Another big takeaway from this Ohio State-Penn State game, considering how great Ohio State's defense looked yet again, I think this is just making me realize how great Oregon is, which segues into the other game I want to talk about. Michigan hosting Oregon ended up falling 38. I'll start on Oregon's side, where I'm just continue to be so impressed by their offense. They truly have NFL players at every single position, you know, at offensive tackle and along that offensive line, right there with Ohio State as the best wide receiver duo in the country. And Dillon Gabriel just keeps looking better and better. His ball placement, his understanding of this offense, his decision-making, and his ability to then scramble when that's what the defense gives him. It is becoming more and more apparent that this Oregon offense might just be indefendable. They are looking better week after week and are scoring seemingly at will. The defense I wouldn't call elite. I think that secondary is certainly beatable. You saw they lost track of Colston Loveland a lot of times, and giving up chunk plays to this Michigan offense I think is certainly be seen as a red flag. But this defensive line is so versatile. They have so many guys that can line up in different positions, and they do such a tremendous job of getting you behind the chains and taking away the run game and really making you a one-dimensional offense. They were able to do that for the most part against Ohio State a few weeks ago when they hosted them. So I'm just continue to be impressed with Oregon. And looking back at that Ohio State-Oregon game a few weeks ago, I think it's becoming more and more apparent that was a matchup of the two best teams in college football. And I can't wait to see a rematch. Hopefully we get this rematch in the Big Ten Championship game. I think Oregon is on pace to cruise to 12-0. And if they can go up against Ohio State again in the Big Ten title, that would be an epic clash. But then flipping to the Michigan side, I saw on Twitter after this game some Michigan fan accounts saying that they could easily be 8-1 right now, and it's not as bad as everything seems. And I frankly could not disagree with that more, because the reality is this Michigan team is closer to 2-7 than they are to 8-1. I think the offensive effort they gave against Oregon was inspiring. Davis Warren really for the first time this season looked like a Division I quarterback. But they would have had to score 40 points to pull out that game. And no matter how well they play, this is not an offense that's capable of scoring 40 points really against most Division I teams, let alone Oregon. But I think the most concerning thing isn't their offense, because we've known this has been a weak unit all season long. But my most concerning part about this team is the defense. This is far from a great defense. They have a few great players who will likely be first round picks or close to it in this upcoming draft. But outside of that, they are not playing as a unit. This is not a defense that forces a lot of mistakes, gives you a lot of different looks, confuses you. This is not a defense that steps up in the red zone when it matters the most. This is not a defense that can commit to taking away the run game or commit to taking away the passing game. They are vulnerable at every single level, and it's getting to be very concerning, the trajectory of this defense. Their secondary, it's apparent that they are way too reliant on Will Johnson, really taking away a half of the field when he's on the field. When Will Johnson isn't in there, this is a flat-out weak secondary, I think one of the weaker units in the Big Ten. I mean, his absence on Saturday was felt way more than you should feel the absence of a single player on defense. Even for a player as great as Will Johnson, you should not have felt his absence as much as you did on Saturday. Jahir Hill at cornerback continues to be picked apart, and it's evident that this defense as a whole does not have the secondary that they were, does not have the depth that they were able to lean on for the majority of last year. And then you look at this defensive line, yeah, Kenneth Grant is great on the interior, and Josiah Stewart is one of the better pass rushers in the country. Those are great players who continue to play great every single weekend. But again, they don't have the depth at the defensive line that they were able to lean on last year, where they were rotating in 8, 9, 10 guys every game. So then come fourth quarter, they are fresh and ready to get after the quarterback. They aren't able to do that anymore. When Kenneth Grant and Josiah Stewart aren't on the field, this defensive line can't get any sort of push. And when they are on the field, it's not overly difficult to slide your offensive line or use a running back to chip, bring in an extra offensive lineman or an extra tight end to double team those guys. It's not overly complicated to game plan for them when they are on the field. And so the reality of this football team is that, yeah, they've been in a lot of close games, and Michigan fans, if you really want to be optimistic, you can say they're a few plays away from being 8-1. They are also a few plays away from being 2-7. The reality is that they are likely going to finish this season 6-6 with no answers at the quarterback position. They are now going all in on five-star quarterback Bryce Underwood, you know, offering him this massive NIL package, but in doing so, have apparently pissed off their current quarterback commitment, who is a four-star, top 200 guy, was completely committed to this program, even had a Michigan tattoo on his forearm. They've now lost him, and they're going all in on Bryce Underwood. I haven't seen any indications that Underwood is actually going to flip. So there is a reality. Michigan goes 6-6 and has zero quarterbacks in the 2025 recruiting class. And you think that's the reality of the situation for the Michigan football program right now. It was apparent to me in the offseason, and as this season has played out, it's becoming more and more apparent to me that Sherrone Moore is not cut out for this job. I'm sure he's a great guy. He was a great offensive coordinator under Jim Harbaugh, but he is not the leader of a blue blood program. He just does not have the experience. I don't know if he's hired a great staff around him. I don't think he's a great offensive tactician. I don't think he's a great quarterback developer. And I don't think he really has a great understanding of how to manage this NIL situation. It's become apparent to me that Sherrone Moore is not cut out for this job. And it seems like Michigan fans are still reluctant to accept it, but that's the reality. And when we're entering 2025 off the back of a 6-6 season and you have just as many questions at the quarterback position as they do now, I think at that point, Michigan fans will start to accept the reality. But things are looking gloom in Ann Arbor. It was nice to see them give out such a strong fight against a great Oregon team on Saturday. But I think this team right now is closer to Northwestern than they are Oregon and Ohio State. And you think of all the teams that are on an upward trajectory in the Big Ten, like Indiana, like Michigan State, like Washington, it's really hard to get optimistic about the direction that this program is heading in. But yeah, Michigan was expected to lose this game on Saturday, but they somehow made me feel even more on edge about the direction of this program and how stable they really are. So red flags are certainly up in Ann Arbor. But we can pivot to something more optimistic with Indiana once again blowing out another team 47-10 on the road. They beat the Spartans. And I think what was key in this game is that Indiana trailed for the first time all season. They trailed 10-0, and they just responded with 47 unanswered points, completely unbothered. So it was nice to see them finally tested for really the first time all season long. But this Indiana team just continues to be dominant. The first college football playoff rankings come out on Tuesday, and I hope the committee gives them the respect that the AP poll is not, because in my eyes, they are easily a top five team. I mentioned this last week. The reality is that if you kept Indiana's record, statistics, schedule, all the complete same, and you just plastered Ohio State's or Penn State's or Michigan's logo over top it instead of Indiana, I am 1,000% certain they would be the number two ranked team in college football behind only Oregon. So it's really just Indiana's perspective and their brand that is keeping them from being a top five team, because the statistics all indicate they are. They are top 10 in the country in total offense, scoring offense, total defense, scoring defense, and turnover margin. They have been more dominant than any other team in college football, and it's about time that we are talking about them as such. Yeah, you can easily point to their weak schedule. It is true, they have not played a great team, but they've also left no doubt of who the better team is whenever they play. Like I have said, they have been the most dominant team in college football all season long. And what's interesting, just to further hammer home that the statistics indicate Indiana is a top five team and they're just being left out because they're Indiana, they actually have three common opponents with Oregon and Ohio State. Michigan State, they beat Indiana, beat them by 37 this weekend. Ohio State beat them by 31. Oregon beat them by 21. Nebraska, Oregon beat them by 49. Ohio State beat them by 4. UCLA, Indiana beat them by 29. Oregon beat them by 21. And I hate doing the transitive property in college football because so many things change throughout the season. Teams can have good games, they can have bad games. But people love using the transitive property to justify who should be ranked and who shouldn't. So why not use it here to show just how dominant Indiana has been? So I really hope on Tuesday when the rankings come out, the College Football Playoff Committee recognizes this and gives Indiana the credit they deserve. But it's just another weekend, another outstanding performance from Kurt Cignetti's team. And that Ohio State-Indiana game coming up in a few weeks is going to be a barn burn. I know Ohio State fans are going to go in there expecting to win by 30. It's not going to shake out that way. This is a good team. They have some NFL players on it, and they are more than equipped to beat most teams in college football. So not really anything new, but this weekend just once again hammered home my thought that Indiana is a top five team in college football. We're going to move out west for the final two games I want to talk about. The first one is UCLA and Nebraska. The Bruins pulled off the upset, beat Nebraska 27-20. And first off, caps off to UCLA. They played a great game, second straight win. They're 3-5 now, so a bowl game is not out of the conversation. Deshaun Foster has had this defense playing great all season long. Ethan Garbers is finally starting to clean up his decision-making and is playing like the veteran quarterback I expected him to play as at the beginning of the season. You know, he's playing better, elevating this offense. And this is a team that could spoil a lot of seasons down the stretch. They're capable of beating a lot of teams in the Big Ten the way they're playing. It was a rough start to the season for Deshaun Foster, but he has certainly righted the ship, and I think he could generate a lot of momentum for this program down the stretch of the season to help him out for 2025 and beyond. So first and foremost, caps off to UCLA for a great game and for a great second half of the season so far. But then going to the Nebraska side, I want to swear I won't, so I'll just say, what the hell? Like, how are you not ready for this game? I understand their Ohio State loss last weekend was emotional. It was a heartbreaker. They felt like they were in position to win the game, and they arguably should have, and they came up short. And it's hard after a loss like that to get your head right and regain focus and get ready for another tough game coming up the following weekend. But with a coach like Matt Rhule, as experienced as he is, you wouldn't think that's a problem. And you would think a home game to clinch your first bowl game in 8 seasons would be enough motivation. But it wasn't. They came out flat. They came out like they didn't want to be there, like they believed that they would just show up and beat UCLA simply by stepping foot on the field. They were pushed around on both lines of scrimmage. Just looking at Nebraska in their past 3 games now, it looks a lot like the Nebraska of old with Scott Frost, where they had one game where they played outstanding at Ohio State, could have won the game, but came up short when it mattered most. And you look at the other 2 games in this 3-game skid, got blown out by Indiana, got beaten by UCLA. You just kind of look at those 2 games and then the Ohio State game, and you just scratch your head like, how is this the same team? And this is the kind of inconsistency that you don't want to see in Matt Rhule's second season. Yes, I was tempering expectations for Nebraska coming into this season. I thought the Big Ten title talk and college football playoff conversation was way too much. But even so, I was expecting a more consistent team week to week. I thought this was a team that can win from the point of attack, win with defense, and get to 7 wins pretty comfortably. But that's now all up in question, And it's just become a pattern throughout the entire season where Nebraska is not playing consistently week to week. And now they have a key bye week, which they desperately need to get ready for their final three-game stretch of USC, Wisconsin, and Iowa. And I think three straight wins to finish 8-4 could fix everything, silence the critics, again, generate some momentum that this program really needs heading into a key season next year where, if they do finish 8-4, a lot of people will be talking about top 25 college football playoff, Big Ten title contention next season. That's the logical next step in Matt Rule's rebuild of Nebraska. If they can come out of the bye week and finish on a three-game winning streak, everything I'm saying is moot. They'll be in a fine position. But the way that they've been playing, three straight wins seems like a big stretch, and there is still a possibility where they could lose to USC, Wisconsin, and Iowa and finish with five wins for the second straight season under Matt Rule. And if that happens, what does Nebraska do? That is a tricky situation where the results on the field are simply unacceptable and would get most head coaches fired. But you invested so much in Matt Rule, and if he can't get this done, then what coach can? Considering the implications of an 8-4 season versus a 5-7 season, I think it's safe to say that this is the most important three-game stretch for Nebraska football that they've had probably since Tom Osborne has been there. Three wins could silence all the haters and give Matt Rule the momentum he needs to head into a successful third season at Nebraska. But three losses? There's going to be Nebraska fans calling for his job this season, and he'll certainly be in the hot seat heading into next season, which is not a position he expected to be in heading into this season. And after that Colorado win, seemed like everything was going according to plan. Matt Rule has to figure this out, and he has to generate some wins, at very least get one win in their final three to get them to a bowl game. That's bare minimum what he has to do. And the last game I want to talk about is USC traveling to Washington as the Big Ten's nightcap. Still feels weird that this is a Big Ten game, was giving me shades of Pac-12 after dark, but we got a great game, a 26-21 Washington victory that came down to the final minutes. And I think that this was a story of two programs going in completely opposite directions. I think they were passing each other in the night during this matchup. USC now stands at 4-5. They've held a fourth quarter lead in all five of their losses. So I think an optimistic Trojan fan could easily say, we are a few plays away from being 9-0. It's not as bad as it seems. Lincoln Riley will figure this out and we'll have more success in the Big Ten moving forward. And that's certainly one way to look at it. But at a certain point, you need to make the plays to come out with these tight wins. You just need to be able to make plays. And their blown leads have consistently come down to missed assignments or just a general lack of push on both lines of scrimmage, mental errors, whether it be a turnover or a penalty, and missed tackles. All five of their blown leads have come down to one of those. And it's really the story of Lincoln Riley's USC tenure. They've had some great talent on the offensive side of the football, but they've been incredibly inconsistent on both lines of scrimmage and really on the entire defensive side of the football. And I knew that this would be a rocky first year in the Big Ten for USC with how much they struggled on both lines of scrimmage in the Pac-12. It didn't make sense for them to come in and win 8-9 games in the Big Ten this season. But Lincoln Riley seems to be taking it as a personal challenge to see how hot he can make his seat going into 2025 by consistently having the same issues year in and year out that he has had since the beginning of his tenure at USC and honestly going back to his tenure at Oklahoma. These are issues that have plagued him across the board and they aren't going away anytime soon. So now they have a bye week coming up and then they host Nebraska. And the tension in that game should be palpable because both teams and both head coaches desperately need a win to quiet their fan bases at least for one more week. And USC needs to win two of their final three games just to get to a bowl game, which really seems like a bare minimum expectation for USC. And their final three games are Nebraska, UCLA, and Notre Dame. There's a possibility that they lose all three of those games. I think they'll certainly be underdogs against Nebraska and against Notre Dame. And that road game to UCLA will be tricky. There's no quit in this Deshaun Foster team, and they are much stronger along both lines of scrimmage than USC is. My assumption has generally been that Lincoln Riley, no matter what, will get one more season with USC in the Big Ten to prove that he has what it takes. But if they lose those final three games and they go 4-8, that's a really hard season to validate and be okay with if you're USC's administration. So if they lose those final three games, I don't know. There is a really good chance, I think, that Lincoln Riley does get fired. But similarly to Nebraska, they're also three straight wins away from generating the momentum they need to go into a pivotal 2025 season. So it's going to be really interesting when USC and Nebraska play because those are two schools seemingly at a very similar level right now. And on the flip side, Washington, I've been impressed with their fight this entire season. Their offensive line has been a struggle. We knew it would be coming into the season, but they have shuffled guys around. They've played a lot of guys when they've needed to, and were ultimately able to push around USC, who has had similar issues on the offensive and defensive lines, despite having more experience coming into this season. And I think that their ability to close out this game, it just reaffirms my belief in Jed Fish and the direction that he has Washington heading in. We knew that they weren't going to be a top 25 coming into this season. They just lost way too much from last year. But like I said, I've been really impressed with their fight. And honestly, I think Washington is in a really good position to pull off the upset at Penn State this weekend. I think there's a good chance the Nittany Lions could come out flat and a little slow after that really tough loss against Ohio State. Just look at how Nebraska came out this weekend after a tough loss to Ohio State. So I think there's a really good chance that there is a lack of energy and a lack of passion in this game against Washington coming up. And if there's a quarterback in the Big Ten who can walk into the whiteout and come out with a win, it'll be a veteran guy like Will Rogers who's able to do it. And even if they do lose their final three games, which is possible, they play Penn State, UCLA, and Oregon. I do believe in Jed Fish more than I believe in Lincoln Riley, based on what he's been able to accomplish with this roster compared to what Lincoln Riley's been able to accomplish with his. So really, when I was watching this USC-Washington game, apart from how entertaining it was as a game, really felt like this was a story of two programs going in completely opposite directions. Because I love Washington's trajectory. You know, if I'm ranking the best teams in college football over the next 5 years, I think Washington, I think it would be close to a top 25 team, and I'm not even considering USC in a list like that, given what I've seen out of them this season. But that was the final game I wanted to talk about. Like I said, a lot of action in the Big Ten this weekend, a lot of implications, and I think a lot of big takeaways. We certainly learned a lot about a lot of different teams in the Big Ten this weekend. But that'll do it for this episode of the Big Ten Blitz. As always, I've been your host, Sean. We will be back here later this week with another episode going a little bit broader outside the Big Ten, giving you some college football playoff talk. But until then, hope you have a great start to your week. Hope you got to enjoy a great weekend of college football. I appreciate anyone and everyone that is out there listening, and I will catch you here in a few days on another episode of the Big Ten Blitz. Thanks.